Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City. I am Connor McDowell. That's at Connor McDowell on Twitter and Instagram. Do you like how I switched up the format?
Okay. All right. Get your pandering for followers right away. We love. And I'm Dylan McDowell. And just, you know, for parallels, I'm at Dylan McDowell, of course. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram.
You know what I'm thinking about? Moments before we started recording, I was on Twitter and I saw this tweet that was like, when twins are born and they're not identical, what even was the point? And I'm like, oh my God, dead. That's hilarious.
We used to be very identical.
I know. Do our listeners know that we're twins?
I think so.
Okay.
I think
interesting.
So.
Interesting thought.
We fought for years and years, like in middle school, to be different, to look separate. Like, so I was sick of being called Connor. And now I think the twin thing is such a novelty. I would do anything for people to think, oh my gosh, they're the new twindom.
I know. You know, I bleached. We were just talking to our guests before about hair colors, but I did bleach my hair blonde in the sixth grade. And that was a moment in time. I forget why. It was sad. We're going to move on. Okay. There's been so much going on in pop culture that I want to just touch on really quick before we bring our guest in.
I know. And I don't have fully fleshed out thoughts yet, but Ms. Taylor Swift did it again. She dropped another album that she said she kept writing. She just had to put out this another record. And we have Evermore.
We have Evermore, which I was like, when she announced it, I was overwhelmed because truthfully, I'm still sitting in Folklore. I'm still sitting in Folklore Long Pond sessions. It was a lot, but you know what? It's beautiful. It was so funny. We listened separately and like you listened in the morning or whatever. And then I like had something to do and I was driving and I finished listening to it and I called you and we were like, so we both heard the album and we were just
beautiful
quiet.
Beautiful gowns.
I know. And I think we were expecting to be like, gagged, completely blown away, you know, gutted to the core. Taylor, like, what I love about her is how she writes about love in the way that I think a lot of us can feel it, and she puts to words our feelings that we didn't even know we had at
times. definitely.
And for some reason on my first listen I was not obsessed, and then I felt guilty about it.
There's no, that's the Catholic upbringing, you immediately feel guilty. But the thing is, you know, she's always reinventing herself, and this is the first time she isn't. It's more of just an extension of what we had. And so I think we can respect it for what it is. From what I'm reading, a lot of people were underwhelmed at first, but it's a beautiful listen through. I'm excited to dig deeper in. And like we talked about with Folklore back when that surprise dropped, we'll be analyzing her lyrics and things for years to come.
Yeah. And that's true. When I listened to it, I was like, oh my God, these lyrics are incredible. Like,
yeah,
she's a genius. And I think we have to also pay credit to Beyonce, who made the surprise album drop a thing back when she dropped her self-titled album.
Yes.
And that was actually a true surprise. There was no even like day before Instagram announcement. It was just like midnight. It was out. Boom. iTunes.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll talk more about Evermore on the Patreon and on other formats as we go forward. There was another piece of content that came out yesterday, the prom movie on Netflix.
Ooh. And by the time this episode comes out, our listeners will all have probably watched it. It'll be in a couple weeks. But it is out. The controversial prom film.
Yes.
But there's two things about it that are not controversial to me. And that is the performances that Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman gave.
Icons.
I was gagged. The last time I saw them together was Big Little Lies, and there was drama. So.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yes, they did work together on Big Little Lies.
There was a slap. Didn't she slap Meryl?
She did.
She didn't.
And then Meryl screamed at the dinner table in that meme that was like viral.
Iconic. Yeah. I liked the prom movie. I did not. I mean, no hate, but just honesty. I think James Corden was the wrong choice to play Barry. They probably should have just had the original Broadway cast do the show.
Considering it was direct to Netflix, I don't think that they needed a draw to get people out to the theaters. They could have had Meryl or like a few big names, but you know, a lot of these roles were created for the performers. Angie Schwarr, Beth Lovell, of course, Brooks Ashmanskas. And to me, it did feel offensive. You know, we're friends of Caitlin Kinnunen, and just the whole way that it all went down is sad. And
it is sad. I know there was some shady business going on too. So I did not like that.
But if they insisted on having celebrity cast, they should have had Tytus Burgess as Barry. He would have been phenomenal. Ooh. An out gay man, a person of color. I mean, like the you know. Anyways, we do need to talk about Nicole Kidman because she was fabulous and she has a connection to our guest today. In a way, she does.
I'm honestly gagged, Dylan. That's a great way.
She starred in the Moulin Rouge film.
Oh my! Wait, has Nicole done any other musicals other than Moulin Rouge and The Prom?
I don't know.
I feel like
I know
a bad
she's done
gay.
Broadway. She's done like theater on Broadway, but I don't know.
Okay, yeah. We'll do some research. Listeners, write us and let us know. But Dylan, please bring our guest in because I am dying to talk.
I know. So our guest today has a connection to Nicole because she's also in Moulin Rouge, but the superior Broadway version. And here we go. Our guest today is a 2020 Tony nominee for Best Performance by an Actress in a Featured Role in a Musical for creating the fiery triple threat role of Nini in Moulin Rouge before gagging audiences and doing that thing with her leg on stage 8 times a week. Our guest has been slaying roles on Broadway and beyond, making her debut in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in 2004. In the 16 years that have followed, she has stolen the show as Marty in the Kathleen Marshall revival of Grease, been the name on everyone's lips, it has Roxy Hart in Chicago, and appeared in one of my personal favorites, The Wedding Singer, A Chorus Line, Spamalot, Starlight Express, Nice Work If You Can Get It, and much more. She's also a favorite of New York City Center Encores, having starred in A Chorus Line as Cassie once again in a triumphant performance, The New Yorkers, and Paint Your Wagon. In addition to appearing in Fosse Verdon on FX, she is a Helen Hayes and Emery Battis Award recipient, as well as a Gregory Award nominee. She is an icon, a bartender, a mother, and the hostess of the hottest underground soiree, Bar Nini. Please welcome to Drama, Robin Herder.
I'm going to clap for my own introduction.
Your reactions were so funny. You were like, oh my God.
Well, guys, I'm on fire.
Like, you are.
No, I mean, my soul right now, I am, face hurts. I'm so flattered. What a grand introduction.
Deserving of every word. Robin, we love you.
Oh, I love you guys. I so wanted to drop in on your intro of pop culture. I have things to say, but we can get to that later.
No, oh my God. Yeah. No, I'm wondering, have you watched The Prom?
I haven't watched The Prom. I've been seeing it on the Netflix, and I was, well, this is rude, but I was busy. I can't remember what I was doing, but I was invited to the, you know, the screening a month ago or something. And because Bill Damaschke is, you know, our producer of Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yes.
The Prom. And he invited me, two or three times to see the show. And I've seen it twice. Ugh. And you guys have seen it.
Oh, yeah. Twice as well.
I saw it three times.
If I could have seen it three times, I would have seen it three times. If I could have seen it five times, I would have seen it five times.
Uh-huh.
I loved that show so much. And talking about casting, I get it. Movies, put your name there. But every single person on that stage was so perfectly cast.
I know.
You can't, like, I couldn't even imagine a replacement in there.
I know.
Like, you can't touch Beth Lovell. Like,
you can't.
And she keeps topping herself. Like, that performance, like, I was tasting blood. I was screaming for joy and clapping, but also just, like, laughing so hard at the same time and then crying. She does all these things, too. She's one of my, who I want to be when I grow up. Like, I think she is the creme de la creme. She's so stunning, but everybody in that cast was just, and especially for Angie, I was like, yes, thank you. Yes, please. Let this Broadway showgirl vet shine. And she was perfect. And I could go on and on about that show.
Oh, I love to hear that.
I will watch it. And I'm a lover. I don't ever go in ready to hate ever.
Yes.
I want, that's why we, that's what I think why I'm in the arts is I want to be moved. I want to feel my body start to shake and I want to start crying and not know what's happening to my body. Mm. And so I hope that there are those moments in the movie that I feel that way, which I'm sure there will be.
The material shines still. And that, and like the music, that gorgeous music that, you know, Wedding Singer composers right there, you know, which I mentioned, they're so talented. And it's amazing. You know, you said blood in your mouth when talking about Beth Level, and I'm laughing about that still.
Well, I mean, it's like when I should get an award for best audience member. Everyone says it. I mean, I get yelled at by people who don't realize that I'm in the arts and, you know, I'm an asshole. But like, I literally can't contain my being when I'm in a theater seat and I see my friends up there just giving like amazing astronomical performances. And yeah, I just lose it. And I sometimes feel a little blood in the back of my throat.
I feel it. You know, this week we had on Wednesday night, the Grinch live, or not live, the Grinch musical. And then there was the Best of Broadway. And then there was the Prom. And I was thinking, people are hate watching these things from home, but we haven't had theater in so long. Like, if anything, we can respect the performers are getting to perform again, you know?
That's, yeah. And I was a day late. So I've just, this week has been nuts for me, but I watched the Best of Broadway last night with my husband, and I was a puddle. I was crying the whole time. I mean, I had definitely like three tequilas, but I was crying. I started shaking again because I'm just like, thank you. Same thing with the parade, mm-hmm. The Macy's parade. When Hamilton started, I don't think anybody in the arts had dry eyes, mm-hmm. you know, but just that, like you said, people are getting to perform and show the world what the world can be like with art again. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. You know, people haters gonna hate. But
that's right.
She's got Taylor on the brain right here.
Is there any Taylor in Moulin Rouge? Any Taylor Swift?
No.
There's not. And there's not an Anne Juliet either. The Max Martin show.
She's got her stuff on lock.
She's waiting for her Broadway venture.
Yeah, there's no way she's just gonna be like, here you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to think about when people are like, do you have any what la 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 in the show? And I'm like, well, we do have like 73 songs. I'm trying to think about, you know, what we do have and not have, but yeah, we don't have any tape.
I'll never forget reading that piece that was like the only person who said no was Bruno Mars to Uptown Funk.
And that was heartbreaking because when we did the lab in 2017.
Okay. We were all younger. So much ahead.
So much younger than we did. It was what Burning Down the House is now in the opening. It's the end of the Bohemians, that these guys would be like, dun, 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 this shit, that ice cold Michelle Pfeiffer, that white gold. Like, they just went off and they just exploded on into the club. And it was just like, and it was really great. Santiago would come up, he'd be like, I'm too hot. And then I'd come up to him and do this like cat ass thing. And I'd be like, hot damn.
Yes.
Bruno said no. And I was like, all of us, because it was great. It was exactly what it should be.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh
man.
But it's okay. I mean, we get to do Talking Heads.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm not mad.
There's something
it.
For everyone in Moulin Rouge. I mean,
for real.
There really is.
You know what? You're our first Moulin Rouge cast member that we've had on the pod, and we started the podcast a year ago, and we saw Moulin Rouge like the July before. So this is a highly anticipated moment, Robin. But you know what? Before we talk about it, actually, probably every week, to be honest mm-hmm. with you.
That's true.
But before we jump into the show, because we have questions and comments and love to give, I'm wondering something about you. How are you? Are you doing well?
I am. I will always answer very honestly and authentically. I am very happy that I'm a very transparent person. And like today, I'm good. I mean, I threw my back out. I'm on some, you know, some drugs, but it's okay. It's nothing to bat and a glass of wine can't fix. And it happens to me all the time because of, you know, what I'm usually cast as in shows is they're like, oh, her back's bendy. Let's do it. So I've been, you know, working around this back for a while now, but I have my life and I'm breathing in air and I can smell things and taste wine and look at my son and hug him. And I was dancing yesterday. I mean, it's really those things that I go through the list all day long, just repeating like how grateful I am to be on this earth and be surrounded by people that I love so much. And I keep in contact with the people that make me so happy. And I have this thriving, beautiful son that drives me absolutely batshit most of the time, but like, I still have him and I love him more than anything in this world. And I'm just filled with gratitude because there's a lot of bad things happening right now. And we've gone through a lot of trauma with loss this year, as many people have. And, it's really made me so grateful to be alive and never take advantage of one moment you have on this earth. And yeah, I mean, I in general, yes, I'm good. There's little stupid things every day that annoy me. And yes, there are days where I crumble because I'm like, wow, I used to be on Broadway and now it's month 9 mm-hmm. and I'm 12 pounds heavier and I can barely kick my leg up to my face anymore. Like I, you know, there's those things, but those are all things that will be mended.
Yes.
I'm just happy. I'm happy to be sitting here with a, you know, a ring light and makeup on my face talking to you.
We're grateful to you. Robin, you have such a great perspective. I mean, talking earlier about how you're not a hater and then now talking about how you have gratitude, where does that come from? Have you always been that way?
Yeah. I've been, I was born on January 1st and I just kind of came out with a bang and I've always been, a spaz. I think like growing up, a lot of people found me very, very irritating, very annoying, kind of like Hudson, but I just, you know, I would wake up every day and be like, oh, it's today, you know, the sun would kiss the horizon and I'd be up and at him and so excited and looking forward to what today could bring me. I don't know. I've always been full of spirit. I thank my mom and my dad for always being so supportive and really loving seeing me be so excited about life, my entire life. And, I don't know. I hate it when I feel sad. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to fix it. But I allow myself all the feels. I'm like, you are allowed your moment to be angry, whether it's like, I didn't get a job. I'm so passionate about it and I will break down and I'll scream and I'll cry and I'll scream at Clyde. And I give myself 24 hours and I'm like, I'm going to just get all of my feelings out. I'm going to say whatever I want and then get over your mm-hmm. shit. Yourself off, pick yourself up and start all over again. And then
You're amazing. I need to adopt some of your attitude here for real. It's been a dark December, I should say. I don't know. I've been feeling kind of down, even with this like wonderful news of the vaccine coming, you know, I still feel kind of like, oh my gosh, how do we go on? But there is so much to look forward to, you know, I need to remember that.
No, and it is true. There are times I will say like I stopped watching the news. Mm-hmm. I'll look at little updates on my phone, but I notice my energy will start to shift when I just pop that CNN on and I'm just like, it's not that I'm in denial in my little, or I'm not realizing the severity in my little forest bubble up here in Highland Mills, but it's, I do have those moments where it really hits me that I'm like, what we knew it's never going to be like that again. Our normal is going to be a very different normal mm-hmm. coming back after all of this blows over. And when I do have those moments where I kind of crumble and I'm like, what is happening? Especially like we're in the second wave, yeah. You know, I just got noticed my son is now fully remote.
So you're
schools down again. I mean, he was a hybrid. So he was only going a week, but, we'll probably get to that later. The whole homeschooling thing. It's just, you know, it is more exhausting than NeNe in some ways, just having to be this stay at home mom, teacher, and you're like, wait, but I did have this life that was like on Broadway. It's always the scales. Yeah. They're always never really balanced, but sorry, I'm going off on
tangent. Oh my God, you're good. This is so real. We really appreciate it. This is awesome.
Good. I go on tangents and I'm like, what was I talking about?
I forget.
Oh yeah. I feel there are times where I just feel really down, but then I'm like, you know what? There's hope. This is a moment and it is going to pass. Yeah. It's just taking a little bit, but it will come back. There's no way that the arts and entertainment and Broadway and sitting next to someone and saying, hi, how are you? Let me shake your hand. Like, it's going to happen mm-hmm. again. And that's where I switch my energy.
Yes. Yeah, we have to.
Like, look for that light at the end of the tunnel. No pun intended for Starlight Express.
Yes. Oh my God. We need to talk about some of your greatest hits in your career, Robin. For real. Well, I think I want to start with our first introduction to you, which was the Grease revival that came after the reality show, because we were in Grease in our school at the time. And
we were in an eighth grade production, believe it or not. We were like 13 or 14, which
is young.
Too young.
Grease.
It is young to do Grease, but if you're going to do a show, I guess do Grease. You can finagle around a lot of the stuff.
Rizzo was exclusively PG. There was no pregnant. There was any.
Right. Of course. That.
And everyone in school was like, what is PG? Like, no one uses that expression anymore. So it was just like, Rizzo's PG, pass it on. But so I feel like I have this memory of the cast being on stage at the reality show finale. So can you refresh my memory? Were all of you already a part of the Grease revival? And then they were like, let's do a reality show to find Danny and Sandy. Was that how it worked?
No, what happened was I remember seeing the notice in the backstage newspaper that I bought up 207 in Cooper and Inwood. I was reading the breakdown that there was going to be this reality show and it was Kathleen Marshall. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to work with Kathleen Marshall because I've known of her from the obvious, but also my husband did Music Man with her and the movie. And so I was like, oh my God, I want to work with her. I want to work with her. And of course, Grease, I'm like, I'm going to be Marty. Like, I want to be Marty. I went into an open call. So they knew that it was going to be a reality show. And that's when they started casting for ensemble and the other principal roles. I went into an open call and I sang, you don't own me. I'm not just one of your special dudes.
Oh, that's perfect for Marty.
And, and I sang it and they called me back and I did some dance moves with Kathleen and had another callback. And then I had another, I mean, there were way too many callbacks for Grease. I mean, I was 24 and I was just like, oh my gosh, I could get this. And then they gave me a call. And I remember Clyde was in the shower and they gave me a call and they said, it was Megan Larchy who, I had kind of developed a relationship with her through all these callbacks and she really was rooting for me. And she said, Robin, you're going to get an offer for Marty. And I guttural, like the blood scream, screamed at the top of my lungs. Clyde flew out of the shower naked, dripping, but being like, what? He thought I had like fallen out of our five floor walk window. Like I was like, I'm on the phone. I'm like, I got Marty.
Oh, that's so special.
And then they said, so you're going to, I can't remember. I think it was like in November or December or something. They said, you're going to, it was in December that I got the call because I was doing Wedding Singer at the time. This was that cute moment when like, I just got a lot of jobs and I was like, whoa, this is fun. I was doing Wedding Singer. I had found out I auditioned for Chicago. I found out I was going to be a replacement in Chicago for Mona and in the new year. And then I got a call like 2 days later being like, you're going to be Marty in Grease in June. I mean, it was like, wow,
that's unheard of.
I was so ignorant. I just was like, I love Broadway. I want to do everything. I'm just going to strip my stuff. Didn't really have like insecurities back then like I do now. Mm-hmm. And, But yeah, so they said, we're going to call you in a couple months. What the plan is, there's this reality show. We're going to have all the other, the T-Birds and the Pink Ladies be at the final taping. So when they announce the Danny and Sandy, we go together.
Probably, yeah. Right?
I don't know. Yeah.
That was probably it. I think that's probably what it was.
Like, does he have a car?
Oh, Summer Nights.
No. Summer Nights.
No, it wasn't.
Go together. Yeah.
Maybe. Anyway. So, yeah, it was really crazy. And we just went to LA and they, you know, it's such a blur now, but we had like one rehearsal with Kathleen on the set. And then I went to my costume fitting and they're like, here are your white pants. And I'm like, you're going to put me in white pants on television? But I did it and it was wicked fun, and we found out Max and Laura got it, and you know, the rest is history. Yeah. But in that show, in the Broadway show, there were 14 Broadway debuts, so it was
it was a
feisty group.
I can imagine.
I mean, the Pink Ladies alone, it was you, Lindsay Mendez, Kirsten Wyatt, Jenny Powers.
Yeah.
The amazing. All icons to us, truly.
Oh, yeah, I know. Lindsay and I still are yelling at each other on messages. It's hilarious.
And now, you know, Lindsay has Tony for Best Featured Actress. You're now nominated for the same award. Like, how cool is that?
Oh, my God, Robin, I need to tell you, we have like a Patreon, which is like a bonus content podcast where it's just Dylan and I kind of gabbing about stuff. I mean, I'm not jinxing anything. I'm just putting this out into the universe. I think you're going to win the Tony.
I don't think so, dude.
I have a strong argument for it. And I think the Jagged vote will split. And I think that you are the next favorite, regardless of where all the other ones lie.
Well, thank you.
So I think
that's very kind.
Seriously. Because I think it is a tight race. But your performance in Moulin Rouge is one that everyone was talking about and still is. I mean, come on. But for real, I'm not just gassing you up. Like, yeah. For real. Like, I remember when I saw the show, I was at my survival job like the next day or something. And, you know, it was like at a spin studio. So like a lot of aspiring actors and people who are, you know, jumping around, everyone was just like, I want to see it for Robin Herder. I want to see it for Robin Herder. They're like, I follow her on Instagram. I'm obsessed with her and her son, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, what the things that she does on stage, just unbelievable. Robin, you're fantastic.
Thank you so much. That really, it's just hard for me to accept it because I am very humble, and I'm a very hard worker, and I'm very stubborn, and I want to do good work, and I always want to be better every single night. Just because that's my work ethic. I just want to push and try to get better and stronger and a better actress and singer and performer every single time I'm on stage, taking advantage of that practice to just try to get better. But I have to say, I was not expecting a nomination whatsoever at all, not even in the slightest. I actually forgot that they were announcing the Tonys that day. And I'll just be very honest. My press people they're like, maybe not like say this in your interviews, but I was severely hungover. Like it was bad. And I was like dead on my couch and I was like curled in a ball. And I saw the category come up and I was just like, oh, right. And I see like, you know, Laura Patton, Kevin Gallagher, like I see them. And I said to Clyde, I was like, oh yeah, I hear these girls are really flung my body off the couch. And I was like a lion looking at the screen. And I just saw my name swipe across and I sort of heard Robin Herder, but it was like, it was guttural. Like I was nasty crying. Like it was a weird yelling primal cry that I was just like, it was so unexpected. I certainly did not expect to win. I cannot believe I have that name in front of my name now. And I will take it and run.
Yes.
Because no one can take that away from you. That is, it's so special.
I have already won. I am literally like, I can't believe that. And it means so much to me that like, I know I can sing. I I can act, but not everybody can dance. And it's really hard to tell a story and tell your story and your character through dance. That's what I have. I don't sing my own song. I don't sing one line by myself. I sing all the top shit in Lady Marmalade. I mean, she's not an easy track. But, I mean, I'm screaming E's and F's. Like, it's atrocious in a corset, but it's fun, but it's intense. But I have a few lines. I literally don't sing one thing by myself. And then I have these scenes that my body has to make people feel something and understand me. And the fact that it's been recognized in this way. And dance has always been my first love. I've been doing it for 34 years. It's like, it's everything. And I can't believe it's, I always knew I, because it's my goal. I will get nominated for a Tony and I will win one. I just never, ever, ever thought it would be for this. And I'm happy as a clam. I don't need to win. I mean, do I want to win? That would be really awesome. But to me, it's like, I've already won in my mind.
Robin, you are radiating. I am just so happy for you. And it's so true. I can't think of a nomination over the last few years in a musical that has been more dance-based or something in that vein. Because I think oftentimes it's the forgotten part of the triple threat when you're talking about storytelling, because the audience can listen to a cast album or something along those lines. But
that's true. Wow. I can't tell you how many times I hear actors be like, I'm a singer, actor, mover. They love to say that in interviews. And I'm kind of like, well, no, we have like a true triple threat here with Robin. Another reason why I think, you know, you're going to get it. But you have me honestly very emotional, because that is how inspiring to the thousands of young dancers out there, that their dream is to go, you know, to work, to be in shows. Maybe the dream is Broadway. Maybe it's some other, you know, format. But that is so special. And I feel like at the moment you're representing that dream to so many kids and young people, people older than you. So I just think amazing. Bravo. I'm going to sob for real. Like, I'm like overwhelmed with emotion.
Thank you. And that's why I want it. You know, a lot of people are creating art. There's a lot of people, you know, belting their titty boos off and making this art, which I think is great. I could do it. I just don't want to. I mean, I'll make music with my husband, but I think I've been throwing myself. I want to teach dance classes and have these Q&As to really talk to this younger generation, to be like, this was not handed to me. I had to work my ass. I have worked my ass off for 3 decades to get where I am. And these things can happen. They can happen, because I'm just like a normal little girl from Maine. I still feel like I'm 14 years old and in my living room in Maine, like dancing around. So that's why I've been doing a lot of dance videos and stuff like that, just because I just want to celebrate what's just been celebrated, you know?
And it looks like you have a really amazing at-home studio to be able to work.
Yeah, it was when we bought the house, the first time we saw it, we didn't even realize there was a basement like that. And then the second time we saw the house, I went downstairs and my mouth dropped open. And from head to toe, when I know things are going to work out, I get this feeling like goosebumps from the top of my head all the way down the side of my face, all the way down to my feet. I get this feeling and I'm like, the magic's happening. I'm going to get this house because this is meant to be. Like, I'm supposed to have this studio to keep alive. Like, I mean, Hudson was 3 at the time. And you know, it's a blessing, that studio. I mean, she's narrow and she's definitely concrete, so there's no jumps, but it's a blessing.
Oh, that's so great. You know, I need to say, I had told the listeners that I would stop talking about Aaron Tveit back in November, because it was becoming a weekly thing.
And talk about Aaron, little unicorn.
I need to know what it's like to work with him. He has been, we talk about Ring of Keys moments, which we'll get to yours eventually, but he was that for me very much, like in middle school, you know, seeing him in Next to Normal and Wicked. Mm-hmm. And now he's finally got his Tony nomination, which is overdue beyond compare. What is it like working with him?
Oh, it's terrible. He's a horrible human being. Such a snob. No.
Thank God. Now Dylan will stop talking about it. Okay, Robin, thank you. We can move on to the next question. I'm just kidding.
he's a dream. He's everything that you want him to be. He's obviously, like, cause he's famous. So I think right. You see him outside of the theater. Obviously there has to be a reserved, like he has to be a little bit more reserved, but, cause I mean, I just didn't realize like he is kind of famous cause he's such a, it's kind of like my brother. You know what I mean? I go out and I'm like, oh, right. People are fanatical about you. Like,
I feel very attacked right now, Robin.
but as they should be, because he is just so weirdly talented. I mean, people who have seen the show many times, they see that he's always, you know, singing real, real, real strong and real well. And that's the thing. It never falters. He is the most consistent performer I have ever seen. His voice, I'm like, you have a unicorn voice. Like, it doesn't go away. It just magically sparkles and does all the right things every single time you open your mouth. And he's like, oh, thanks, Robs. he's great. He's so smart. He will always stand up for the company. He'll always speak up. His work ethic is scarily perfect. He's just, and he's such a nice guy. He's so great. And what's,
oh my gosh,
fun little tidbit. I live in Highland Mills and he comes from a town that's 25 minutes from me. So in the lab when we were working together, I was like, hey, I just moved to Highland Mills. He's like, oh my God. so we kind of come from the same place now, which is really cool. So he's a great man.
Thank you for indulging me.
For anybody who is like, I wonder what he actually is. Cause sometimes, like, you know, people can turn into, they show themselves one way. And then you actually, as the person is like a terrible human being. Fortunately, is a true gem, and I adore working with him. He's a good guy.
Oh, I love that. And I can see like the backstage videos of you and Ricky and him, and you guys all are just goofing around.
Always.
Just lip syncing. It looks like a family.
It is a family. I mean, we've been through the trenches. When you build a show like this, a beast of a show like this, and you go through the readings and then the lab and then like maybe this little mini workshop and the pre-production, and then let's go in for a couple of days and read this new script, and then you get ready to do a huge rehearsal process for your out of town, and then you don't work for 9 months, and then you come back and you put up the Broadway show, and there's so many changes because it's so massive. You get bond, you're in rehearsal and you're in tech for so long that you really form this bond that we are like our, that is a Moulin Rouge. Like, we are a family.
It's one of my favorite musicals in the recent years. We took the road trip to Boston to see it. And I remember we ended up seeing one of the first performances because there was issues with the Colonial or something going on. So they ended up canceling like the first couple performances.
And we broke the theater. Yes. Our set broke the Colonial.
Oh my God. Right after it was refurbished, right?
Yep, they did all their, you know, renovations, and they tried to hang our set, and it bent the grid.
Oof,
so they were like, God. Go home. So we had like a couple, I don't know, a week or two off, and it was so weird. But then coming back, it was such a blast. It was amazing.
Oh, it was so good. I remember feeling like I was in such an experience. You know, I think you go in, you see the sexy men's is up on the stage and they're spinning and twirling. Wait, oh my God, I just realized I haven't asked you about your amazing friendship with Max Clayton, which is such a joy to watch from afar. You guys are truly the dynamic duo. I love him. Oh my God.
Oh, I love him too. We were actually just texting last night after my three tequilas. I'm just like, I just miss you so much and I want to see you and why can't we be together? And you know, it's hard. It's hard when you find your like soulmate best friend and you can't really see each other. We saw each other a few months ago, but you know, now we kind of have to like hold up and wait this thing out to see each other.
Well, because there's a minute there where things had gotten better and everyone was masking up and things were good. And then all of a sudden the weather changed and it's just.
The weather changed and then the holidays come in and everybody's going to, they're going to travel. They want to see their families. And also it's like everyone's sadly, like they're used to it. You know what I mean? And they're tired of it. And it's just crazy that we are in such a worse situation now than we were when it was like stay at home, like quarantine, you know, like in March, April, when, you know, I had it so many of the cast members had it.
Right.
It's not good.
I have one more Moulin Rouge question and then we will move on. But when Broadway comes back and it's the first night of performances, what are you most looking forward to about the show when the audience is there and it's time to perform?
That's very hard. There are so many things that I am so excited about. I'll tell you the one thing that I'm terrified about is, my corset, but let's just, you know, say a prayer. The biggest thing is, hearing the minute people are going to hear that boom, clap, clack, clack, and the audience is going to roar. And mommy is very emotional. I can't hold things in anymore. And I will be behind that scrim and with my girls and I'm going to break down. And I can't, that is just not Nene. And I need to whip around, which is one of my favorite parts. When it's like, Holly turns, hey, sister. And then I flip around, go, sister. And we're all like fierce and we rip off our dresses. And then we take those stomps downstage and then we just hit it. I can't wait. That's the most exciting that we are the ones that get to plow this show down everybody's throat first. And then everybody else joins in. But it's like we are starting the celebration. I mean, I know Aaron comes out and he like does this magic thing. But it's really like, welcome to the mother effing Moulin Rouge. And I can't wait for that. I can't wait for, there's this moment when we do voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir. And we walk 2, 3, 4. And then I take this jetting run to what I call my pounce seats. It's the platform on stage left.
Yes.
Right in front of the bar. And I go run. And I jump like a damn cat and I pounce down onto the platform and I almost fall into the people's lap. I love scaring people. I call them my pounce seats. And now certain people will sit there just so I can, you know, mess with them. Yeah. I love that moment. And then I, you know, just dancing with Ricky, Bad Romance, walking out as Nene, you know, I'm not going to lie. It's going to feel really good when I get to slink up and then he sings whatever he sings. I forgot the name, Bad Romance. I do my arm and I look out to the audience. Like it's going to feel really good going back and doing that, knowing like what has transpired. Mm-hmm. And then Roxanne being, I mean, it's going to hurt again.
The tango.
It's like, oh. I can't wait to just be terrified and be thrown on the ground and bounced and tossed and bent and hear Aaron's unicorn voice scream at me. And you know, it's everything. I'm just so excited about everything. I can't wait. Every single moment I'm going to be excited about. It's almost too much. I just don't.
Well, that's where I want to be. That's where I want to be when it's back.
I just know I'm going to cry and I can't cry. Like Nene can't do that. She doesn't shed a tear. Yeah.
No, she's so strong. She's so strong. There's that moment between Nene and Satine. I think it's kind of towards the end of the show. And it's one of the peaks into their relationship that is so cool. Yeah. I want more of that, to be honest with you. But
yeah, well, I'm, and a lot of people say that because it's like the one moment where there's a pin spot on this relationship, and it's the arc, it's the turn, it's the moment that you see that the Nene has a heart, like she's going to protect no matter what, even though like I want to show girls your ass and throw some marbles, but like I'm not going. I don't ever want anything. I don't want you to be hurt. You know,
right. Care about you. No, me Malone.
A little bit. I mean, we have this hilarious, hilarious joke, you know, when Satine's dead and the boys carry her off, there's this huge joke where I walk off and we're slowly walking off, and I think I'm like with Reed, and then it's like Aaron's talking, and then he stops talking, and then there's a spotlight, and I go, a kiss on the hand, maybe. I go fully into diamonds again. Uh-huh. And like magically in her corset, and it's like Nene took over. Oh my God.
It's Versace.
Oh, it's Versace. That's right.
It's Versace. Mm-hmm. Oh, you'd be great in a Showgirls musical.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fun, but mm-hmm. I don't want to be naked.
You're like, that's I'm done true. Dancing.
And I'm also kind of like, I can't do this much longer. I can give you a whack and a bevel, but I'd rather just park and squawk. Like, yeah, I'm getting
a nice park and bark.
Yeah, yep. Put me in a negligee. I don't care, but you know, I can't.
Oh my God. Okay. Wait, we're like talking about so many things. There's one question that we ask all of our guests that we haven't gotten to yet, but I am so curious with you. We like to ask people about their Ring of Keys moment, which is that moment of recognition when they understood that art had to be a part of their lives and they wanted to be an artist or to create. Do you feel like you have one of those moments, Robin?
Oh yes. I've told this story a lot, but I never get tired. The listeners, if you've listened to another podcast, you're going to hear this again, but I don't get tired of telling it. well, when I was 6 years old, I saw the show Cats. And I was in Portland, Maine, and I saw the touring company, and I was just fascinated that I was like, wow, I love dancing around like a crazy person in my living room, but people are dancing on a stage live and we're all watching it. And I was like, that sounds like a lot of fun. So I signed up for dance. And I loved it. And I kept dancing. But what really, what made me from that point on, I was laser focused. And I was like, this is what I want to do was when I was 11 years old, I was in New York City for the first time at doing a dance competition, which I have to add in. It was Talent America. I had choreographed my own solo to a cut version of the Jellicle Ball. And I got third place.
Oh my God.
Wow. Did. I'll find the tape and I'll post it one day.
Yes, we need to see that. It's a solo Jellicle Ball.
I did fouettés, like four of them on a flat foot and a flexed foot. Like I was a mess, but I was like, I'm doing fouettés. But yeah, anyway, we were staying at the Marriott Marquis. And at that time, it was 94, Damn Yankees, the revival was happening in Cal. And that was my first Broadway show. My mom's like, well, let's go downstairs and go see a Broadway show. And I was like, oh, okay. And I remember we were in the third row on the aisle, and I was like, I'm obsessed. I've always been obsessed with like the old school, like 40s, 50s jazz style big band. And I loved everything that was happening in the show. And Victor Garber was the devil. And that he's forever my Broadway crush, forever. I was obsessed with him, but then he says, get me Lola. And the big band is like the brass, the horns. It's like, it's like all this loud noise and it's like vibrating my body, and this smoke comes up out of the stage and I see something rising out of the stage, and it's this pink chaise lounge, and there is this woman in a platinum blonde wig and a pink corset and garter belts and shoes, and she says something like, you rang, chief, and she is just, there is Bebe Neuwirth on that that entrance, and I know she's going to do some things. And I turned to my mom and I said, Mom, that's what I want to do when I grow up.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history.
And then I did exactly that. I'm now laying sometimes on a chaise or in a corset and fishnets. Platinum blonde.
Platinum blonde. Oh, that is so... I love that story.
Yeah, so
I love it.
And what's really cool is, I mean, talk about like, this is, I make sure to tell these younger dancers, like dreams can come true, because when I got the show Chicago, it was in 2007. I entered when Bebe Neuwirth happened to be doing her 8-week run as Roxy. And I was terrified of her. She only called me Marilyn for like the first 6 weeks that I was there because she didn't know my name. Then it was Kids Night on Broadway. And two nights of Kids Night on Broadway. And she says, okay, what I want to do is I want to ask all the cast members if they were a kid kid, what was your first Broadway show you saw when you were a kid? And the first night I was too nervous. And the second night I was like, Robin, I was 24 years old. I was like, Robin, just say it. So I said, I'll say, and she's like, oh, Robin. Okay. And I'm like, oh shit, she knows my name. And so I grabbed the mic and I told all the kids that I'm shaking, cause I don't really speak out loud on stage often. And I was just like, well, when I was 11 years old, my first Broadway show was Damn Yankees. And I told the story about, I saw this woman come up and blah, 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 blah. And that woman was Bebe Neuwirth. And I just want to say to all of you, if you have that dream, my dream is coming true right now, because I am on stage in my favorite show dancing next to one of my idols. And then Bebe gave me a hug, which the whole cast was like, and and the audience erupted into applause, and it was a really special moment that I got to actually share that in front of Bebe Neuwirth on the Chicago stage. I mean, I was literally like, what's my life right now?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Dreams.
Oh my God. That's iconic. So full circle. Wow. A hug from Bebe Neuwirth. That's like when RuPaul hugs one of the girls in the workroom. They're like, oh, we can touch Ru. literally bury that. Oh, how fun. I love that story. Okay. Wait. So you did Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were in the Chorus Line tour, right?
Yes. I was in Chicago. Then I did Greece. And then I was supposed to start the tour as Val. Because my husband was Mike at the Clyde was.
Oh. Mike.
And so they put me through the ringer. See, the thing is, they're like, come in for Cassie Camp. And I was like, bitch, I'm too young. I have no idea who this woman is. I've never been unemployed. I'm like that bitch. I'm like, no, I don't want to. Let me do Val. But they made me go through the Cassie Camp. Ended up, they didn't give it to me because like, uh-huh. Oh, you're too young. And I was like, I told you that. Why'd you put me through this? And I was like, can I do Val? And they're like, yes. And then Kathleen Marshall wouldn't let me out of my contract of Greece. But I didn't want to mess with her because I was in the workshops for Nice Work. This was back in 2008 when it was going to be with Harry Connick Jr. And I,
yes,
he had been.
Oh, right.
So I didn't want to mess with that thing. Thank God I didn't. Right.
Oh, God.
So I didn't do the first 6 months of the tour. And then when they were going to switch up the cast, they brought me back into audition for Cassie. And that's when I did Cassie for a year. And I was fine. I kind of didn't enjoy myself because I'm like, I'm a fake. I'm a fraud. I'm a phony. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know this woman. This woman is so special. And I'm just a kid. I was 26, 27 years old. And I'm like, this isn't right. So I was doing my best impression of a girl who is trying to play Cassie. I mean, I could dance it fine. I could sing it fine, but it wasn't like, those scenes are so special that when City Center came along, talk about that, the goosebumps from the top of the head down to the feet. When mm-hmm. I got a call from my agent, I was going apple picking a couple years ago. I got a call from my agent. He's like, I don't want to give this call, but Jay Bender is telling me, call Robin, call Bob. He goes, Julianne Hough's about to pull out. If she's going to pull out, it's in 2 hours. And if she pulls out, you're getting an offer. And I didn't want to audition. I was like, oh, they're going to cast a celebrity in it. And when he said that, like the magic tingles from the top of my head down to my feet. And I was like, I think this is going to happen. And this is going to be really special. And it happened.
Oh my God.
Talk about the hottest ticket in town that weekend. The rumors were it's going to transfer and everything. That was between Moulin Rouge runs, right?
Yeah. We were hoping, like Tony and I were talking, we're like, man, all we need is like just a 10 week. Cause uh-huh. I can't do this. It's too hard, but I'm like, just like 10 weeks, like a cute 10 weeks, like get this thing on Broadway. You know, they're talking about reviving it for their like 50th, but I'm like, bitch, I'm like what? 43, 44. I'm like, that is not happening. Like I'm not, there's no way. I'm too old.
Now, when you played Cassie again, were you finally like, I know her?
Yes, I went through life. I mean, I've had a string of panic attacks. I've had breakdowns where I haven't gotten off the couch for 2 days. Because I hadn't worked for 3 years after I did Cassie on the national tour. Like I got home and then I just didn't work for 3 years. Nice Work was my next show. I got married. I had a child. I have gone through the ups and downs of being burned in this business and the high highs and the low lows and just life in general. And now I'm how old was I? 35 years old, 36 years old. And I'm like, this is right. And also, you know, I've known Tony since I was 19 years old. Like, we go way, 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 way back. That those scenes were, they were, we didn't have to work at it. We just talked to each other. It was like just the right, and the every single one on that line, every single person, it was just the perfect recipe. It was such a special 3 weeks. And my, I like that last performance was, and I always end up crying, but like the last performance, I, you know, the curtain goes down and Tony goes, all right, standing O. And I go, what? He goes, standing O. They all stood up, Robin. And I go, what? And he goes, they all stood up when you finished. Everyone stood up, Robin, while they were clapping. And I held it for a minute. John Braulio said, because I'm such a dancer. And what mommy says, do. And Bjork's like, you do not break that pose until you hear the applause start to die. And so I didn't. And I was shaking and then I was crying because I heard them and everyone screaming and it went through the rounds of screaming, but you can't see anything. Like you can't see black and you just see the red dot, which is Zach. And I just stood up and Tony's like, Robin, they all stood up. And that's when I'm just like, what? And then Sarah Jessica Parker gave me like a 3-page text. I have it in my phone, but I'm not going to read it.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. He went off on me and I'm like, Sarah Jessica Parker. Like it's, and I have it printed out and I like keep it in a special place when I just every now and then in the dressing room when I open it up and just read what Sarah Jessica Parker said. it was because she was there that night and it's the most magical moment of, you know, my career. And then, and now I got nominated for a Tony for something that I mean, Jesus Christ.
I am obsessed. You deserve it all. I mean, just hearing your stories and having followed your career for so long, it has been a treat to see this like Robin Renaissance again. And when I'm thinking all of a sudden, so do you know Sarah Jessica because you did Nice Work with Matthew Broderick?
Yes. So it goes way back because Clyde did Music Man with Matthew Broderick, the movie back in 2001 or two.
Yeah.
So he knew Matthew and Matthew is a gem. He's, you know, I adore him with my life. But Sarah, you know, he knew Sarah a little bit. So we had that connection, but Sarah would come into the building every now and then. And when you, it's like, you knew she was there because of her exquisite perfume, but it was like an energy. You're like, Carrie Bradshaw has entered the building. It was, and because she is, she's just so much light and love and like intense energy. She's just so passionate. And so she was so sweet to me and Nice Work. And, you know, her girls, the twins, they loved me because I had the tiara. They're like, look, there's the princess lady. There's the princess lady.
Oh, so cute.
She knew me because she was like, I was trying to get, is this your number? I've been trying to get Matthew to get your number so I can write to you. And so that's that.
That's amazing. What is your life? What is your life?
I don't know, but I love it. I love my life. I'm so grateful. I just want to live every day. We're meant to wake up and be happy. That's the goal, right? We could be gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We've lost some people this summer, and that's what I'm like, we have no idea what tomorrow is, honestly. I mean, Nick Cordero, it's like, you know, he's one of our dearest friends. And we're like, man, he did not know, you know what I mean? Like March 1st, what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And why I'm like, we have to just, the goal is to wake up and feel good. And we should live our lives. Seriously, what you said.
Live your life.
Yep. So, yes.
Oh, how beautiful. Every time I see Amanda's posts on social media, it makes me take a deep breath and think about, well, I'm frustrated about something really, really stupid right now. And she's raising, you know, one and a half year old kid.
No, yeah. I mean, listen, we are all, everybody's going through something. We are all allowed to feel what we want to feel. But then it's always, I think it's healthy to just remind yourself of what we do have. And I think that helps get over whatever the silly thing we might be upset about is.
Right.
Go through the same thing again. And I'm like, oh girl, come on. It's just Hudson dumped over some milk. It's not the end of the world. Why are you screaming at him? Like, why are you screaming at him? Get over it. The same thing with Clyde. I'm like, babe, he's six.
Yeah. So is he in kindergarten or first grade?
He's in first grade. Yeah.
First grade. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm, you know, Mrs. Mommy, first grade teacher.
I'm trying to think what the curriculum of first grade is. I feel like addition and subtraction.
Yep. He's doing addition and subtraction. You know, snap words, digraphs. We're learning about conjunctions, you know.
Wow.
But this is the thing, guys, Common Core math. We didn't have this when we were growing up.
No.
Right. Right.
They want you to write an essay as to why 2 + 2 = 4. And I want to blow up his Google iPad.
I
just want to torch it. I'm like, it's because 2 + 2 = 4. That's why. Show the word. How do you show it? There's two apples and there's two apples. It's 4.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get so angry about it because there are moments where I look at his workbook and I'm like, I don't know how to do this. And then you realize I have to call my brother, my older brother. And I'm like, what is this? And he's like, it's literally so simple. It does help the kid. I think it does help you become a better mathematician when you get older. But man, when you're not raised on that, I'm like, I'm so happy I don't know how to do first grade math. That's awesome.
Drama.
Well, I always think like I didn't know how to do it when I was in first grade, let alone sixth grade. So I don't know how I'll ever do it with a kid one day. So
I will say I'm just grateful that he's only in first grade because I can still like, you know, tell him, Hudson, color inside the lines, like his reindeer looks like a pile of, you know, produce mashed together. It's really something. I'm like, color inside the lines. Like,
what does he want for Christmas? Like, what's the thing right now?
Where's my phone? I mean, I could, if I can find this, if you bear with me, I actually do need to read you his Christmas list because it is so whacked out. It is so weird. I'm like, who are you? Hold on. It's coming up.
So does he believe in Santa?
Sure does. And we do too. It's really interesting. It's like, we have to tell him. It's like, the problem is because we're watching all the Christmas movies and it's always like, why do adults not believe in Santa? And why the whole thing that kid doesn't believe in Santa? And it's like, because when you stop believing, he doesn't exist.
Mm.
As it is. And I'm like, of course. And he's like, do you believe in Santa? I'm like, of course I believe in Santa. But I'll tell you what, if people have been following my elf shenanigans, that kid is going to be so pissed when he finds out what I've done to him.
Oh yeah. I've seen the elf on the shelf. You were putting it on the chandelier and whatnot.
I was. I mean, I'm having fun this year because I'm not tired. I'm not coming home from the show and just wanting to go to bed. I'm like, I have time and I've had a lot of wine. So he's going to do Clyde tilts. He's going to do mommy splits. Okay, listen to this list. He goes, Dear Santa, I would like a Nerf gun vest with bullet holders and bullets and a Nerf gun 7 and up.
Oh, very good.
A drone, a bullet drone that can shoot and that has a camera so I can watch that it can transform into anything. I would like a jet and a robot of those. I would like a snowboard and skis and Pokemon cards, GXs and EXs. I would like Squirtle evolvings and Squirtle. Those are Pokemon characters.
Yeah.
Liverpool soccer ball, a Lego chain reaction set, a watch that can turn me invisible, a pet lizard, a night suit, and a zombie sword. And I would like 10 elves. The end. Love, Hudson Elves.
He is a doomsday prepper. Basically.
I'm like, why all the bullets? Like, why do you need a drone that shoots bullets?
That's so cute.
And he goes to shoot the squirrels. I'm like, I can't with you.
Oh, this is actually going to be the episode that comes out before Christmas. That was like a perfect little treat for.
Oh, amazing. Well,
yeah. Oh my God.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
I love it. Okay. So we are sadly wrapping up on this wonderful conversation, Robin. We're obsessed with you. But we like to end on a dose of drama, which is something to leave our listeners with, maybe a pop culture recommendation, perhaps a rant against something you've been musing on, or it could be anything going on in your daily life. And I think this week I'm going to kick it off because I am feeling dramatic about something. Go off, Connor.
I know. I've been watching so much television since, you know, March. And actually since before March. Who am I kidding? I watch it all the time. But I don't know if the trope is the right word, but in scripted TV shows, when a character is having a, you know, you don't realize it at first, but the scene ends up being a dream where, you know, perhaps they die or they get stabbed or a former character is back. And it's like, it's a total fake out. You know, it's this crazy scene that's like obviously not happening. And then they wake up and you've just wasted like 5 minutes of television on this like stupid dream sequence. I'm done with the dream sequences. I'm done with it. I want more character development. I want the reality. I get that it can be fun sometimes to like, I'm specifically talking about this Ryan Murphy Ratchet show that was on with Sarah Paulson. They did these, and I'm just like, I'm tired of it. I've had enough.
I feel like a dream sequence works really well on stage because it's an opportunity for a big production number, like in Fiddler, like the Fumacera number, or
Oklahoma.
Honestly, there's in a way a dream sequence in Moulin Rouge with Chandelier. Things get a little wacky there.
That's true. But anyway, scripted TV show writers, please, I'm begging you. There's more content to fill your episodes with. I don't need any more fake outs. I'm kind of done. What about y'all? Any doses of drama?
I'm so boring. I strive on not having any drama in my life. And I'll tell you, this is
work.
Maybe people don't know this about me. I am a Bachelor fanatic.
Same.
For the Bachelor and Bachelorette. So, and I love the fact that I have gotten Clyde wrapped into it. It's like he tries not to watch it. And then, but now this season, he is so fully in. And he's like, he reminded me, because now they've switched it to Tuesday nights, which is really
Tuesdays.
It's like, you're really throwing me for the past decade. It's been Monday nights. And it's like, I know on the DVR, it's an hour and 24 minutes. And I always say, this is mommy's hour and 24 minutes of trash. Nobody. But I love it. I love it. And I love everything about this season. I love the drama with Claire. I mean, she is a red flag. She is the largest red flag on the earth.
Absolutely.
You can see it from space.
She
is such a hot bag of mess. And I hope it's real between her and Dale. But
I hope so too. You know, I know.
She treated those men, that the manipulation. I'm like, you are that crazy girl. That's why you're single, boo.
It's why. I know. I was excited for the season because I was like, oh, we're going to get a bachelorette who is like no bullshit. Exactly. She's going to know what she wants. And then I realized that's not good TV.
No.
She's not playing the game, you know?
Exactly. But I love Tasia and all the.
Me too.
And I also just like, it's so funny, Clyde watching these men. He's like, is this really like, this is what's out there? Like, is this how men act towards women and with each other? And I'm like, I mean, it is probably dramatized because it's television and you do have the producers, you know, whispering in your ear and stuff like that and editing. But I'm like, nah, yeah. He's like, oh my God, these guys are just a bunch of pussies. But it's such good television. We laugh so hard. Yeah. And I think that's where all of my drama lives. I try not to have it anywhere in my life, but I live for The Bachelorette. I've been watching it since 2006, 2007.
Oh, wow.
I'm a loyal girl. It's so funny because I don't watch any television. I don't watch any reality shows. I used to watch, you know, Project Runway and Housewives and all this stuff. But, you know, if I'm watching TV, it's usually a cartoon. It's some Pixar thing because I have
yeah.
attached to my hip. And then, you know, when I'm working, Clyde and I can't sit down and do the Netflix thing. Like, we can't watch mm-hmm. anything. I mean, the last series we watched was, we had to stop Game of Thrones after the Red Wedding because I was pregnant when I watched that episode. And I was just like, okay, I'm not watching TV anymore.
Mm-hmm. Like, traumatizing.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, that's really my drama. And I live for it.
I love that.
I love it.
I love Ben. Ben is like so cute to me on the show.
Ben is great. Ben, oof, he really
dropped, he's been through it.
Dropped the bomb last week. But yeah, if anybody is happening, I feel like that's the front runner. And then there's like the mock turtleneck guy. He always wears a turtleneck.
Brendan, yes.
I don't, I don't know.
I don't know if they're right for each other, but I think he's really sweet.
Very sweet. He is.
Their first date was really, they seemed really into each other. He was like, I'm divorced. And she was like, I am too.
Right.
You know, they were riding horses and Chris Harrison was like running around the resort, acting a fool, being silly.
It was really, I know some of their little antics that they try to like do now. I'm like, oh my God, can you stop? Can we just have like good old fashioned dates?
But yeah, again,
they're quarantined on, you know, the La Quinta resort.
Yeah, so. That's right.
But
which, like, I don't want to go there.
But I mean, she's real, real cute. She is super cute.
Oh yeah.
And then all the drama with Bennett. Is that his name? Bennett.
Yes.
Bennett and Noah.
Oh God. I'm like, how are you even he's like, he thinks he's so much more attractive than he actually is.
100%.
You are so creepy. Yeah. Oh.
What is she seeing that we're not? I don't think she's seeing anything. I think that she's being told to keep him.
I think it's kind of one of those things where it's like, we gotta like amp up the villain aspect of our show.
Yeah.
So
he's like the mansplainer, like the guy you like meet at the bar who tries to like convince you of his whack opinions, like condescending.
But the present and the emotional intelligence. I was like, get off the screen. It's like I'm looking at my television at him. Oh my God.
Literally. I thought that Tasia was very authentic though. She goes, wait, what is in the box?
She's like I thought what is in the box? And then, oh my God. And then when she like gives Bennett the boot and she comes back into the room and Noah's just like, haha. And she's like, I wouldn't be smiling. I was like, yes, no,
I was gagged. Oh yeah, my
she's
God.
Fun. She's very fun. Oh my God. I love it.
Okay. My dose of drama is quick. Michael Riedel released a new book called Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. It is amazing. I tore through it in record time. If you have certain opinions about Michael Riedel aside, all I know about him is that he was on Smash as like a snarky reporter, but he captures like the 90s into like right up to the producers of Broadway era. And it is thrilling. And I need him to write a third book about everything up through now. And it is so good. They talk about B.B. Newworth is a character. They talk about all the Andrew Lloyd Webber, Patti LuPone, Glenn Close drama. It is so good.
Wow. Okay.
If you're a reader, you know, once you're doing the hour drive, maybe there'll be an audiobook you can listen to.
I am definitely an audiobook person. Mm-hmm. I'm a mom dancing and being naked on stage or sleeping.
Exactly.
Have long car rides every day.
Oh, yeah. Well, Robin, listen, we are so thankful for your time. This was so much fun. You are the real deal. Everyone should follow you on Instagram. You're at
Robin Herder.
Just Robin Herder. Okay. Robin Herder. And then on Twitter, it's Robin Hearts.
Robin Hearts NY, which I thought, you know, I created that Twitter account when I really, really loved New York. I was like 27. And now I don't really love it. I mean, I'll always love you, New York, but it's not like Robin Hearts New York. Come on, girl. I'm so not active on Twitter. Just, you know, my TV channel is Robin's Instagram at Robin Herder. Get your squirrel content and, you know, drink content and cooking content.
Oh, yes.
I haven't done a cooking show in a while, so I should probably do that.
Robin is going to be, you always make these amazing cocktails. You can get your recipes for the holidays of some cool cocktails.
I know, it's so dumb, but I'm about to make a video that will be posted later on today about, you know, it's a festive cocktail, let's say, but it's very,
I can't wait.
Very Robin style, which is dangerous.
I love it. Well, Robin, thank you so much for your time. We are fans for life. I'm rooting for you in the Tonys and I can't wait,
as you know,
to see what's next. Oh my God, we will get through this. And on the other end of it, I can't wait to see you rocking it out, girl.
I know. I hope we can meet in real life.
Oh, we will. Of course we will. There's no hope. We will.
We will.
Yes.
And we will get to squeeze each other. That's the best part. We'll get to actually touch.
I can't wait. All right. And everyone should, of course, follow me at Dylan McDowell, follow Connor at Connor McDowell, and follow the podcast at The Drama Podcast. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everyone. And Connor, we'll see you next time.
Drama.